Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Are you one of many Americans who are tired of people being bullied and discriminated? You are not alone. Bullying has a rippling effect on the person who is being harassed and everyone associated with the bullied person. The targeted adult or child may have been physically or psychologically bullied. They often bring home their anguish with them, and this can have a crippling effect on everyone associated with the one who's being bullied or discriminated. It's time to shed some light on how to reduce bullying in the school systems, how to create safe and healthy work environments for employees. I blow the whistle on how to protect yourself if you're being bullied and educate listeners on their rights if they're being bullied or discriminated. I bring in the best experts who provide empowering strategies, tips on resiliency, how to handle the experience of being bullied or discriminated, how to heal and overcome the effects of being mistreated. If you are ready to gain knowledge and insights on bullying and discrimination, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Hi, everybody. I'm Dawn Westmoreland with the Empowered Whistleblower. And today it's a sunny day for both of us, my guest and myself. We were just talking about it. But even though the sun's out, it's still just a little chilly. So today's guest came from a small town. He's a small town city boy. And today he's a world traveler to corporate success. His name is Cornelius Simon. And he has overcome the odds of being average and settling for mediocrity. Now, we had a talk before. And he said as a child, he had issues with a little bit of bullying and name calling and such. But today, he is in a whole different leadership. I mean, he is commanding respect. He's out there speaking to organizations. He's a professional development. He's a manager. He's a senior manager. I'd like to welcome you, Cornelius. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Don. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So I know you're out in California and I'm in Asheville, North Carolina. It's funny that it's sunny, but it's still a little cold, but it's going to be warm here soon. So let the listeners know a little bit about your childhood, what it was like, because it certainly was very different than how it is today.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was born and raised in Louisiana, so a small city in southwest Louisiana. And, you know, typical setup, you know, the small high school campus being on. And I remember distinctly how I was trying to fit in. That was all, I think that's always been some of my issues as a child. As I look back over, I was always trying to fit in. And with that oddity that I had of being a, you know, a tall, skinny kid or a medium high skinny kid and trying to fit in with the in crowd and with the athletes and whatnot, I remember there was those times where, you know, I was just, you know, not fitting in well and trying so hard to fit in. So my background is, you know, again, the average student just kind of exists. I like to say I just kind of existed in high school. I didn't find my identity. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I just existed. Wasn't academically, wasn't athletic. And so that was my childhood. And I remember taking some moments before I graduated to figure out, okay, what are you going to do? Are you going to stay here in Louisiana and, you know, work at a plant, or, you know, get in trouble with your friends, or are you going to go out and do something with yourself? So I had come to a pivot point in my young adult life or my young life where I had to figure out what's next for me. And so that's kind of a background on how I got to where I am now. I was, you know, determined to overcome, you know, the odds of just being, you know, the average kid around the block who just, you know, don't do anything with their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you also joined the Navy, and I'm shocked, 2 weeks out of high school. What was that like being in the Navy?
I was excited because, you know, coming from a small city, I was not exposed to a lot. So being able to, you know, leave Lake Charles, Louisiana, and probably the biggest city I've ever been during my childhood was Houston, Texas, which was only 2 hours away. But even that was in a controlled environment being a child. So when I left home 2 weeks out of high school, a whole new world obviously opened up to me. I landed here in San Diego, California, started my short military enlistment career. And so it was good. I remember it being exciting and, you know, hello, welcome to adult life. It's time to start taking care of yourself. It's time to start, you know, not relying on mother and father to do your things and take care of you for you. So it was an eye opening to this is what adult life is going to be like.
Yeah, I hear you. And I was in the Air Force, so I commend you for your time in the Navy. What kind of work did you do in the Navy?
So I was working in the communications department. So basically my role was handling message trafficking that was coming into the ships from the different base commands and other ships. So as you know, as we go out on our deployments and they had to communicate with obviously the, you know, the ship, the command, the departments, my role there was ensuring the proper trafficking of messaging coming in and leaving the ship, coming into the ship and leaving the ship. So it was all centered around communications, doing some database work, things of that nature there, which is how I got into IT.
Very interesting. And I'm sure that you learned a lot about leadership, which is also, you know, it spreads out into what you do in the future. So jumping ahead, now you're really doing big things. You're out there like coaching and speaking and strategizing. Talk about what you're doing today.
Yes, currently right now, my passion is helping corporate professionals or helping professionals develop the skills they need in order to get up that ladder. Or for those who've been in corporate America for some time, maybe 10, 15, 20 years, want to transition out of that environment into their own entrepreneur journey, I help them do that. But I really like and enjoy working with professionals because that's primarily my background. My background as being an IT manager, IT engineer, has always been in corporate America and working around corporate professionals. So I really can relate to other corporate professionals and what they deal with from, you know, trying to advance their career, working with other leaders, being a team member, having people that work for them. So I can identify with their struggles and I'm able to relate to their struggles. Mm-hmm. And from that, I'm able to be an effective coach in helping, especially the middle management group, whether it's supervisors or managers, you know, plan out a route or a strategy for how they're going to be, you know, the next director in their company or some director in another company. So I really enjoy doing that. So that's primarily what I'm doing now, working with professionals, training middle management on some of these soft skills that are becoming even more important today than the technical skills or the functional skills. And so I come in and I hone in on helping these professionals and helping organizations develop their emerging leaders through developing these soft skills within their employee staff.
Yeah. So a lot of times people can get promoted because of the skill sets or they've been in a position long enough. But once they start becoming higher up in the chain of command, are you teaching them how to get along with their employees, you know, how to deal with discrimination issues, bullying in the workplace?
Absolutely. And just kind of piggyback on your point, I've was in corporate America again for a number of years, and I've seen folks who've been in their position at a call it a just an employee, been there for 5-6 years, and because someone else leaves, they're thrown into or they're promoted into a supervisor or a manager position, but with no training of, you know, how to be a good manager, how to be a good leader. They know their job, they know the process of what the business is and what they do, but they just haven't been trained on how to be, you know, a leader. And so, yes, I work with these leaders, these, again, middle management leaders, to help them communicate better, help them be more empathetic with their employees instead of being a dictator, but really being a team player, even in their role as a manager. And when you can create that kind of cohesiveness between employee and employer or manager and employee, that creates a better team, that creates a high performance team. And so I work with leaders to help them identify where their strengths are, what is that, what have they been experienced to or exposed to rather, and what are their strengths, and then look at those strengths and also look at, okay, here are some of the skill sets you're going to need in order to, you know, lead a team of 10 people, how to communicate up. Now that you're in this position, now you're sitting in the boardroom with, you know, with VPs or executives, you have to know how to be able to communicate up. So working with their soft skills, giving them communication, giving them the confidence, giving them how to, you know, suggest different ways of doing things without pushing their agenda on someone, really suggesting in such a way where it's seen as, hey, I'm not trying to take over, but I'm trying to, you know, do something for the better of the department or the team. So all those skill set, the average person who falls into some of these roles, they're not developed yet. And so my pleasure is to be able to get in there and now help those middle managers get those skill set that they need in order to match their functional skills to make them the best leader they can be and, again, climb that corporate ladder.
Wow. So tell me, Cornelius, give me a success story. Maybe somebody was having a whole lot of problems in their workplace. Give me a good success story. I know you've got some.
Sure. So I was working with a call center supervisor, and the person was just put into this role, call it maybe 6 months earlier. So we, you know, I befriended the person. We started talking together and started, you know, just bouncing some ideas. Hey, what's going on? Why are you having trouble with your people? And then come to find out, one thing I see that's common, and this was the case with this individual here, they were peers at the manager and his direct reports were peers at the same time. And now that he's been promoted to a manager, he had to navigate those waters of, I'm no longer just your friend now. You know, we don't just hang out anymore. I'm now your supervisor or your boss. And so being able to help a new manager, manage that relationship of now I'm no longer a peer with my direct reports, I'm their manager, and being able to maintain that respect, or should I say get that respect, maintain that respect without becoming, you know, some dictator or some kind of hard supervisor. And so the success of that was the manager, the now new manager, actually talking with his direct reports to explain to them, hey, I know we came up through the ranks together, but now I'm your manager and I have a job, a duty that I'm doing, and I need for us all to respect one another, and that way we can create, a better team. So that was a trying time for this individual because of the relationship that he had with his direct reports prior to him becoming a supervisor. And so it's success stories like that, or I should say it's situations like that where folks are promoted into certain positions without having those skills to navigate certain conditions that's going to arise from that newfound position.
Yeah, I understand. And we both probably remember being in the military, and maybe we had peers that were the same rank, and one of us, got the rank before the other person. And sometimes there's, you know, a little bit of animosity, a little bit of jealousy. So I can certainly appreciate what you're talking about. Now I'm curious, do you also work with human resources? I'm talking about the staff, maybe it's one person. Do you work with them also when you work with the leadership, when you go into a company or corporation?
Mostly from within our organization, I'm working with a team of leaders. So like I have an engagement coming up in Atlanta on the beginning of May. So I'm coming in and training with a team of supervisors and managers across the company. When I'm working with organizations, I rarely do one-on-ones. It's mostly training their staff at different levels for professional development enhancement. So that's in corporate training. I do mostly training with organizations.
Okay, but do you work with the human resources when you go into a company or a corporation? Because people will say they're part of leadership too. I'm curious if you're working with them too. Are they on that team that you're working with?
Well, not this. Well, I've had in the past, but this particular engagement coming up here, I'm working more with the director or the VP and her middle management team of 10 people. In the past, my involvement with the HR person is really just more on a one-on-one personal coaching, if you will. Mm-hmm. How to deal with people issues. That's where my personal life coaching comes on there, when I'm doing more one-on-one and trying to combine the professional development with this personal life coaching side of the people there, the person that I'm working with. So I have some interaction with HR, but mostly the VPs or the managers that's bringing me in to work with their team.
Got it. And the reason why I ask is I'm a human resource manager or consultant. I've been in it 27 years. And I know that a lot of times human resource folks get a bad name. I've seen so much out there on Facebook, social media, that human resources is part of management. So if management's bad, you know, they're, you know, makes HR bad. So I'm curious, when you do your training one-on-one with HR people, What kind of coaching do you give them? What kind of skills or what kind of training? I know coaching's not necessary training, but how do you help HR folks?
Well, with HR people, it's the emotional intelligence and empathy that I tend to focus on, at least in the scenarios that I can recall now. It's them being able to balance their position as HR, as well as understanding the employee's position. For example, if someone is having trouble at home for whatever reason, your car broke down, can't get to work on time, or maybe there's other kind of troubles at home, they're bringing that into the workplace. So in working with HR managers who have to interface with these people here, is getting them to understand the emotional side of what the employee may be going through. So it's not just, okay, here are the rules, here's our policy here. If you don't do this, you can't abide by this, where we're going to write you up, we're going to reprimand you, and then we have to let you go. It's getting them to understand and be more, how should I say, inquisitive of maybe what's going on in the home without digging too deep into it, so that they can have a better understanding of the person's situation, and then try to work with them to give them some flexibility where the company can, to help the employee manage their personal life a little bit better. But what I've found in the past is typically when there's some problems coming on in the workplace, it's something that's spilling over from the home. And as an HR manager, my advisement has been to, okay, let's understand what's going on outside the workplace as much as we can without, getting to any legal trouble. And then from there, trying to balance the HR policy, the corporate policy, with, your understanding of what's going on emotionally with the individual.
Got it, got it. And I understand empathy, but where does that come from? There's always a why. Why is that for you, for Cornelius? Where does it come from?
The empathy, because most people is going through something, and if we cannot have empathy or be, somewhat in respectful or mindful of what they're going through personally, then it just makes corporate professionals, it makes HR people really cold and numb to what's going on in reality. So their life is not just about them working on in the corporate workplace, is also what's going on outside that. So I find that's an effective approach to not just finding out what the problem is, but also resolving the problem when an HR manager is able to, again, have some consideration, some empathy for what the employee may be dealing with. And that's why, as a former minister, and my role as a life coach, I tend to focus more on that with the HR person because they know their role, and I'm not an HR professional, so I can't speak to all the policies and things what they have to do. But I know from a personal side of someone's life that what they may be experiencing in the workplace could be spilling over from something that's personally going on in their life. So again, to get the HR manager to at least look at and be somewhat empathetic to what's going on in somebody's personal life can hopefully help the company not lose an employee.
Yeah, that's very expensive. I mean, I was reading last year where the average, replacement cost is $75,000 to replace somebody. Now that's, from the high end and the low end, and that's a lot of money and a lot of time and such. Now there are employees out there that just don't trust their management. They don't think they have their back, or there's so many reasons that they're not happy. Maybe they're not being heard, not listened to. How do you get these supervisors, managers, mid-managers, how do you get them to address things like that? Because it's not like the old days where, where back at my mom and dad's time, you worked at a company and you were there for 35 years, 40 years, something like that. And there's this turnaround, turnaround, turnaround. How do you get the trust going between the management and the employee?
My first approach would be to the manager is try to be an advocate for the employee. So, for example, if I see an employee is having issues with being on time or finishing their job in a timely manner or, doing a lot of things other than what they're supposed to be doing, my approach and my advisement to managers in my training is, okay, become an advocate for them. And one of the ways you can do it is, okay, how can I, as a manager, you're saying to your employee, how can I help you achieve? How can I help you become better at what you do? So you always start first not by blaming the person, blaming the employee, saying, you did this wrong, you can't do this, you're never on time. But you position yourself as if, I want to help you succeed in this environment. I want to help you succeed in your job here. What can I do to be of help to you? Now, once you take that position, this is what I found personally in my own experience. Once you take that position, then that brings the person, the employee's guards down to as where the employee is not looking at the manager like, you're out to get me. No, you're not. The manager's not out to get you. The manager's out to help you improve and become a better employee within the company. So that's the first approach that I think a manager should want to take. Again, this is barring, and we're not talking about after, you know, a series of incidents over and over and over again that's happened. This is when you see something early on and you now want to start addressing it. You take the position of, how can I help you succeed in this environment or in your role? Now, once that has happened and you've worked with the, you know, with the employee, you maybe created some kind of professional development plan. If it's just something talking about, it doesn't have to be anything, you know, drawn out or typed out, but it could be something talking about, hey, what do you want to do in this company? How do you see yourself growing in this company? And through those kind of discussions, you can create, you know, a professional development plan that can help this employee see how they can grow. Maybe the employee wants to leave the company because they don't see any way they can grow in the company. Or maybe the employee wants to leave the company because they can't express their creativity, their passion within the organization. But sometimes, and I found this in my 25 years of corporate experience, having a conversation with the employee can really open up just to a better understanding on both sides why maybe there's some animosity or some hostility in the workplace, why the employee is not, you know, performing to the peak that he should be performing at. Mm-hmm. And so having those conversations can help both sides and can minimize and mitigate the turnover, $75,000 to replace an employee. So you want to do all those things and many, many more we can discuss. But again, I think the starting point is just sitting down, having a conversation, and as a manager, coming from the point of, how can I help you succeed? If you take that position, then I feel you have a better chance, at least in the beginning, have a better chance of having that employee succeed and become a good employee for that company by taking that position.
Wow, such good advice. Now, what do you think of this? I know as a supervisor, you have your annual, my background's mostly federal government, but you sit down and you give them the performance standards, what's expected of them. What do you think of this? Turn around and asking the employee to ask the manager, this is what I expect from you, you know, in a proper manner.
Right. I've been a part of that. I've seen that happen as an IT manager. I had to sit on the other side of the desk and have my employee, my direct report, you know, tell me how can I improve. Now, of course, there's a bit of pride to you have to put on the back burner and suck up. But if you look at it from a positive, you know, positive outlook, outcome, you see it's not about you. It's about helping that employee become better at what they're doing. And if both parties is after the same goal, and that is creating a high-performance team, well, then both parties can set aside their own biases or personal pride and see the goal in what they're trying to do. So I definitely agree with that, with respect, with tact, mm-hmm. in such a way where it's not offensive to the manager, but yet it communicates to the manager, hey, you could come check on me more. Or instead of you telling me go do this, you can tell me to go do this and give me some more details about this. And that can help the manager become a better manager. Again, it all depends on how both manager and employee comes to the table when it comes down to giving that feedback to the manager and the manager accepting that feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know sometimes employees need to talk to the supervisor or the manager. Do you think they should have an open door all the time or maybe just certain times, you know, certain hours each day?
No, I do believe it should be an open door policy. My role as a manager, I kept an open door policy with my direct reports. I only had to, should I say, close the door when the employee refused to, take any of my suggestions and my advice after we've had a few open door conversations. And so, as a good manager can see when, okay, this employee they're not trying to change. This employee is more, confrontational, and they just want to argue with their, they just want to, promote their own agenda. At those times, on a case-by-case basis, when you need to instill more structure around having an open conversation with that particular employee. But by and large, that's not most common, but by and large, I think a manager should maintain an open door policy, because as a manager, you want to feel that as an employee, you want to feel that you can go talk to your manager about anything that's troubling you. And if you don't have that confidence and that comfort to go into your manager's office and talk to them, then that's only going to, just well up maybe distrust, mistrust, or dislike, dissatisfaction for the role that the person's in. So as a manager, I always kept an open door policy, just because I've been there before and I understand if I can't share what I'm going through with my manager, then I won't get anywhere and I want to just leave the company. So I try to make sure I put myself as much as possible in my direct reports, seats, shoes, if you will. That way I can be open to them to talk to, open for them to come talk to me and not shut off and close them out and not be willing to listen. So again, I think it's very important that managers maintain the open door policy and not just say I have an open door policy, but one that listens. Somebody come into your office, you actually really to listen and be able to, interpret what is being said and speak back to what is, retell us what the employee is talking about. All that's a part of effective communication in the workplace.
I love it. Very good. And so you've been very successful 25 years as being an IT professional and a senior manager. What have you learned in the last 25 years about companies, people in general? What have you learned?
There are differing personalities. You cannot handle or address everyone the same way. The same way I may deal with John in his role, I can't deal with Mark in his role. Same way I deal with Mark in his role, I can't interact with with Mary in her role. So that's one. You're going to have everyone has coming with different personalities, different backgrounds, different philosophies of life, different things going on in their personal life. So if you try to take this cookie cutter way of dealing with everyone, you're going to either shut somebody out or you're going to lose people or become disliked by your employees. And so that's one thing as I look back over and even deal with people now, I can't talk the same way to, again, one person as I do to the other. I have to consider who I'm talking to. Someone is maybe more can take direction and go with it, whereas others may need more hand-holding. So that will be one of the things that I learned through my 25 years as a corporate professional is folks are different. Embrace their individuality and learn how to manage and work with that to achieve a goal.
So, I know different companies, even the federal government, sometimes they have these different tests like Briggs-Meyer, Enneagram, there's other things out. Do you ever work with any of that just to show the differences in personalities, or do you just have a different way of going about it?
I have a different way of going about it. I've taken a few tests myself and I've looked at the acronym escaped me right now. It's a good gauge, but it's not the be all the end all. It doesn't tell you everything. I mean, even for me, I think it's a DISC profile. Even for me in the DISC profile, I split across three of those at different times in my function as a corporate professional. I overlap with some of those. So some of those tests, they're good to kind of help see what you're working with, but I don't think we should use those to label an employee. Say, okay, this is you, because in actuality, we're all some of each one of those things at different times in our career, maybe in different times of a particular role. So only as a basis, but not as a, hey, this is what you're working with here, this person here, and you need to treat them just this way here. No. These are some hints to how they are, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be like this all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like how you said, don't label them. So what if an employee found out about you and they know that you work in the companies and the corporations, you help them, become better leaders and such, but they want to work with you. They want to work with you because maybe they're having issues with their company. Do you ever work with employees one-on-one, or do you strictly stay with the companies and corporations?
mostly with organizations, companies, and their employees, because I'm representing the company. If I have an engagement where I'm doing a one-on-one with someone who comes to me outside of their company, then that's totally different. Then my loyalty, if you will, is with the individual, not the company, because they're the one that you know, hired me. So that's how I treat that. If I'm going through with the organization, then I have to, you know, my role is to support the organization, not the employee. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that if I sense, for example, if I'm working with an organization and there's an employee who wants to, you know, really advance their career real fast, that I'll work with that person maybe outside of the normal training that I would do with the organization, but still keeping in mind that my allegiance, if you will, is to this organization. And if anything comes up that can impact this organization, I have to give the employee first an opportunity to come up front with this to the organization, or either do it myself or sever the relationship with the employee, the one-on-one, and or go tell the employee, the employer, what's going on. Have not been in that situation yet, but it's just kind of a policy that I keep in front of me if something ever come in conflict like that. But definitely, I work mostly again with organizations, have had a few one-on-ones, but most with organizations.
And I understand what you're saying. Most people, they niche, and it's very obviously that you're niched with companies and corporations. So Cornelius, what's next for you? You are really going fast, doing great. What's next for you? What kind of things are you working on right now?
Well, I'm continuing to develop my Success Essentials professional development workshops and finding different ways and adding new soft skills courses that's going to help, again, corporate professionals be more well-rounded in the workplace. So what's next to me is getting this more out there to the masses, come up with some training courses that I can do online where organizations who wants to reach, work with me, don't physically have to have me there in their space. Rather, they can have a computer-based training or online training course where they can, you know, have their employees or their middle management watch the training. So that would be my next thing that I'm actually working on now. It's not complete yet. And after that, it's just, you know, getting more on stage in front of larger organizations. Want to reach back into the IT community. When people find out that I was a software engineer as a profession, it's like, how do you go from being a computer person, in other words, yeah, a geek, to a speaker coach now? And so I want to reach back into the IT community and help those individuals who start to get this itch, like, I don't want to be sitting behind a desk anymore. I don't want to sit behind a desk anymore. Helping them get more comfortable with being out in front of people, with speaking to upper management, with doing more presentations, actually getting on the phone and talking and calling people. So that's a short term, call it 6 months, a year ago, that I would like to see myself doing more, is reaching back into the IT community and say, hey, your life doesn't have to be in front of a computer for the rest of your life. Take your skills and go be a consultant, something like that.
Well, I have to say you're very unique and very special, because I have never met an IT person who ever wanted to get out there and speak and coach and do what you're doing. So you're very unique, and I commend you for that. Every IT person I've ever known is always wanting to, I don't want to say hide, but they want to work behind the computer. They don't want to be out in front. So what you're doing is just amazing, and I commend you for that.
Yeah, I would call it hiding. That's what I did my first few years. I'm like, no, I'm fine over here. I'm good. I don't want to do this. I'm good. Until I started having more ambitions to advance my career is when I said, you know what, I need to embrace this. If I'm going to, you know, get beyond a certain point financially, as well as, you know, my role, my title, I have to embrace being more out in front. And I think within the first 5 years of my career, so yep, I can do this. And once I start doing it, it's like, okay, it's not that bad. But yes, most IT folks are content with just staying behind the scenes.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, because we need someone everywhere. So going back to your training, your online training, have you decided how long it's going to be?
Well, right now, Success.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Right now, Success Essentials is a six module workshop. So where I focus on effective communication in the workplace, critical thinking, problem solving, team building or team cohesiveness. I work with goal setting in the workplace, and a few other ones. I forgot. Oh, conflict resolution. So I work with those six core as a part of my program. And so the intention is to take those and turn those into modules or online course, which will generally be probably maybe call it 8 to 10 hours each. Probably more than 8 hours for each course, where folks are going through training, they're doing exercises, and they're having some kind of feedback with me through the course to get that professional development training. So I can easily see one course, one workshop being like an 8 hour worth of training, just because there's a lot of detail that I cover in my workshops.
Well, it sounds very comprehensive. So what else have we not talked about? Is there anything that we did not cover that you'd like to share with the listeners at this time?
Sure. Well, to go along with professional development, one of the things that I employ in my training, kind of in a, not say unofficial, but in a kind of a indirect way, is the personal transformation side of it. I strongly believe that you can't have one without the other. If you're going to be, because your personal life is going to spill over into your professional life, as we talked about earlier, with maybe a employee who can't come in on time or coming in, irate and just hostile to fellow employees. So there's an aspect of what I do is work with people on the mindset, help them develop a healthy success mindset where they can feel that they have the confidence or get the confidence to achieve what their goals are. So through my goal setting workshop, we go through a series of, where you want to be in 1 year, where you want to be in 3 years, where you want to be in 10 years, where you want to be in 20 years. And that kind of helps the professional chart out maybe not just professionally where they want to go, but where they want to be in their personal life. Because again, your personal life and your professional life, they're going to go hand in hand. It's still one the same person. So that other part of me that we have not yet discussed is my ability to help someone do that, make that personal life transformation that will give them that oomph to get up there, up that ladder. And whether that's, again, dealing with mindset, dealing with, lack of confidence or past trauma, that also flows into what I do as a speaker and trainer.
That's really cool. So when you do this training, you go out to the companies, the corporations, do you go back and do follow-up with them to see where they're at, how they're doing?
Absolutely. I feel I cannot validate the success of what I'm doing until I can get some good, strong feedback from the employees. So from the company. So in addition to doing reviews right there after the workshop, we'll have them fill out reviews on how was the training, was it relevant, different questions you want to know as a trainer to gauge the effectiveness of what you're doing. And then there's a 3-month follow up that I will do once a month with the person who brought me in to get more feedback from, let's say the VP, whoever the person that brought me in, to get more feedback. Okay, how's it going? Are they employing some of these techniques here? No, they're not. Yes, they're doing it here. And then with that, if necessary, kind of suggest, okay, maybe we need to come back in and work more with this particular group in this particular area. And so that's been helpful in the past with, with a small set of professionals really homing in on their skills from what the organization feel they need. So when working with the organization, it's coming into the organization, okay, who are your emerging leaders? And okay, we got 5 people over here, we got 3 people over here. We want to develop them to be, our next, leaders in our company. And so with that, I, do some questioning with the company, figure out what their vision, what their values are, what's their mission, and try to structure a training that incorporates those values, the mission, visions, and core values of the company. Because the ideal is these organization leaders, they are trying to develop, emerging leaders in their company. Well, if they're going to emerge as leaders, then these middle management need to know what are the core values behind the company. So it's not just me coming in and say, okay, I'm going to teach you communication. I'm going to figure out, okay, well, what is it about this company that you want me to work in while I'm teaching them how to be better communicators, while I'm teaching them how to solve conflict or critically think about a problem, try to work in these core values that the company has. So when they do emerge as a leader, they're not now trying to get indoctrinated into their culture. The culture is already instilled in them. So now they bring the functional training, they bring the soft skills training or skills, and now they bring it in the culture background, which makes what I would say a complete, well-rounded employee that's now in a leadership position.
Gotcha. And when you were talking about conflict resolution, you going in, I'm imagining you're doing this with employee and employer. Is that correct?
Well, the conflict resolution is a workshop that I offer as a part of my Successful mm-hmm. Essentials professional development series. And so I'm not working with a particular conflict that's going on.
Okay.
I'm teaching people how to navigate conflict, how to quickly resolve conflict, how to manage conflict where it doesn't escalate, where everyone walks away, with feeling, okay, I was heard, both parties were heard or all parties were heard, and we accomplished a goal. So my role as a trainer is to come in and help people manage conflict, how to minimize conflict, how to spot conflict ahead of time, or how to deal with an escalated conflict.
Thanks for clarifying that. I wanted to make sure I had that really clear. And I love what you're doing, because when you go in there and teach the leaders how to be empathetic and to be good leaders to their employees, what you're doing is creating a positive work and, safe, positive, respectful work environment. And that's what everybody needs, and that's what everyone wants. And when you talk about conflicts at work, right now, if somebody feels discriminated, because bullying in the workplace is not illegal, but if somebody feels discriminated, whether it's sexual harassment, whether it's disability discrimination, something like that, and that doesn't get addressed, and that person, that employee, goes to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or every state has something similar to it, the average wait for a hearing is 4 to 5 years, unless there's severe retaliation, then it's triaged, like if you're going to the emergency room. So what you're doing is really helping the bottom line. It's not just about money. It's about litigation. It's also about time, production, and everything. So I really commend you for doing this, and we need more people out there like you, Cornelius.
Well, thank you, Donnie, and I agree with you. We can catch it up front. We can minimize so many, many ongoing that will, spill over from what could have been really just a simple discussion that could have been had. And a good manager should be able to pick up on tension between his direct reports, or tension between one person in this department and a person in another department. A good manager is able to do that because they're empathetic. This is why I stress empathetic and working with some kind of emotional intelligence in your day-to-day as a manager. It's because a lot of things that is stemming from some kind of emotional problem. And if empathy is strongly woven into a management style, I think a lot of these conflicts, a lot of people leaving the job, turnovers can be minimized just by being more empathetic. I think is a big part of what's missing in corporate America. It's all about the agenda, and not looking at, okay, let's be more empathetic about our people here, or with our people.
Wow, you're a game changer. You really are. So wrapping up, I want to thank you, Cornelius, because everything you talked about wrapped around empathy and understanding, and that helps people to get along. Now, if somebody is listening in, and we know that you don't work with employees, remind me again, companies, corporations, who can reach out to you if they want to contact you, to talk to you, to hire you, maybe they want consulting. Who's your target audience? One more time.
So my target audience first is organizations. It's directors or VPs of companies saying, hey, we see a group of people, a group of employees that we want to develop. They're the future of our company. So that would be my first target audience. Another target audience would be corporate professionals, that they have their own personal growth, career ladder that they want to climb, and they need to be able to get the skills to get there. They see that, hey, if I'm going to be in this front office or in the back office on the corner, I need to have these skills here, and I want somebody to help me develop those skills. So individuals can come work with me. I don't turn them down. I was just saying earlier that I tend to work with organizations. So organizations who want to work, who want to develop their employees, their middle management or emerging leaders, professionals who have their own, again, ambitions and just need to know how to get there, need a roadmap to get there, as well as professionals who have been in the workforce, corporate workforce for some time now and ready to make that transition out of corporate America or corporate into entrepreneurship. Those are my three target areas.
Great. So you probably do some traveling, but do you also do Skype or consulting over the phone too?
Absolutely. Certain situations is Skype is good enough. But then there's times when obviously I need to travel to go be with the employees and kind of do that activity in the face interaction. It really helps, get the message in that I'm trying to communicate through my training. But I do both. Yes.
Awesome. And you're doing great work. So if anybody wants to contact you, what's the best way? Do you have a website, email you want to provide, phone number, anything you want to provide?
Sure. You can go out to my website at CorneliusSimon.com. There you'll see my speakers page as well as my training and my coaching. So you can get all the different things that I offer through there. Also, you can go to Facebook.com, Cornelius Speaks. That's my page on Facebook where I do put out a lot of my professional development tips and videos, whether it's personal transformation videos or professional development videos out on my page there. Phone number, you can reach me at 619-535-6145 or just send me an email. You can send me an email at Cornelius@CorneliusSimon.com and would love to be able to, talk with you further and see what your needs are.
That's awesome. I've really enjoyed talking with you today, Cornelius. Thank you for your sage advice. Thank you for being so empathetic. And if we could just clone you and put you all over the United States, wow, wouldn't it be a much more wonderful world? To our listeners,
we need more empathy in the workplace.
We definitely do. I'm there with you. So thank you so much again, Cornelius. To our audience, please reach out to Cornelius if you're, his target audience. And, as I always say, stay empowered. Know that there's always solutions. Everybody have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening to the Empowered Whistleblower. As your host, I will continue to bring in the best experts to share their knowledge and empower our listeners. Nobody has to feel like a victim. There are solutions to bullying and discrimination. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. All our future shows will offer practical guidance so that anyone can choose to stand up to bullying and discrimination. You deserve to be happy, and life is all about choices. I always welcome comments and suggestions for new shows. Please comment and share your ideas, and be sure to come back for more inspiration and empowerment. I am Domarie Westmoreland signing off and wishing you much happiness and empowerment in your day.